So, James, you've just got back from the Honda XL750 Transalp launch, and what we're doing now is a kind of reimagination of the ABR Garage, which is the podcast that we did, kind of condensing it a little bit to give a bit of a behind-the-scenes look at a bike launch, really, and your first thoughts on the XL750 Transalp.
Sounds good to me.
So, first of all, for anyone who doesn't really know about bike launches, the concept can seem a little bit odd, right? You, as a journalist, gets paid to go abroad from a manufacturer to ride their bike around some beautiful locations and come back and write nice things about the bike. Is that the case?
It's a tough job. It really is. Yeah. You know, you've been on launches. You know, I've been on a fair few. They are one of the best bits about being a motorcycle journalist and working. You know, editing ABR isn't all about disappearing off to exotic locations to ride amazing new bikes. But yeah, part of it is.
Yeah, for sure.
So for this launch, they Honda hosted us all in southern Portugal. Nice. It was in the far southwest of the Algarve. Flew out there on a Tuesday, I think. What happens is all the British journalists gather together at an airport. It was Gatwick this time. We all met at Wagamama.
Yeah.
Got treated to a bit of early Wagamama lunch.
Weirdly, Wagamama's is where I tend to meet people on bike launches as well.
It seems to be the place to be if you're a British motorcycle journalist at an airport. You go to Wagamama.
I feel like everyone has a Wagamama's order that they stick to.
Well, I went for one of the breakfasts, but I was a little bit late. Yeah, because it was about 11 o'clockish, something like that. So I went for an early morning pad thai, which is delicious. Yeah, it was really good. Yeah, it was cool. So yeah, met the gang there, people from magazines, YouTube, and so forth. Fly out to Portugal, transfer from the airport, and we went to a resort, which is called. I'll check my trusty card. Which is called, you know what, I can't even read it.
You need some glasses.
Cabanas. I think it's called Cabanas. Nice. Yeah, it was a sleepy fishing village turned seaside resort. Rock up, huge hotel, which is half empty because it's the winter. There were a lot of retired couples there kind of wondering what the hell was going on with a bunch of British motorcycle journalists and lots of loud motorbikes. Presentation during the evening. Being Honda, it was a very technical presentation. Bikes up on a couple of plinths, had a group of various people taking us through the bike, the design ethos, going for a deep dive into a lot of the engineering, which some of it went over my head, other parts of it were actually really fascinating. But I think for me, the thing about the evening was there was a huge presence of people from Honda HQ in Japan. Now that is a sign. You don't get that on all launches, and that was a sign that this is a really important model to Honda and that they're expecting to sell a hell of a lot of them.
Yeah, right. So I remember I went on a Honda launch in Spain in the winter. It snowed, like lots of snow in Spain in the middle of winter. And they brought everyone over from Japan for that. And that was the launch of the Africa Twin Adventure Sports. Mm. So a big bike for them there. So the Transalp, Honda is expecting it to be one of their flagship bikes for the coming years, right?
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? Because the Africa Twin is a no-brainer. That is one. Yeah. That is their flagship adventure bike. That's, you know, they make a fair amount of money off the sale of each of them because it's a big, relatively expensive bike. The mid-size Transalp, I wasn't expecting to have so much big backing from HQ, but clearly an important bike for them. So presentations in the evening. I got my handy cheat sheet, which I think
great,
is a great piece of... great piece of marketing from Honda there. So I don't know if you can see it on the cameras. We've got specs for the bike. So I don't even have to remember those. I spent the flight over memorizing the specs of the bike so I could do a social media walk around when I got there. But I needn't have bothered because they're all here.
That's so handy.
And the best thing is the map of the route. I don't know if producer Dan can hone in on that because... Yep. I'm slightly embarrassed to say, but often when you go to these launches, we do a fair amount of them and we're busy before, we've got lots going on. You don't necessarily exactly know where you are or where you're going. You don't always get told before you jump on the flight where the final destination is.
No, you just go and ride.
You sort of jump on the flight, get a transfer from the hotel, which is laid on for you, and go. So having a route of the map is fantastic.
You were saying on the back of the... So you just also come back from Greece for the Suzuki launch.
I did.
The V-Strom 1050.
1050, yep.
And you were saying there that it dawned on you that if you got lost or if you had a crash or if you somehow ended up far away from the group, you have no idea where you are, where you are staying, Anything. I have been a lost child.
Yeah, I was a little bit. And I got there. And you know, when you go on a holiday, you kind of, beforehand, you look forward to it. You learn maybe a little bit of the language. Hello, thank you, stuff like that. Just realize I'm in the middle of Greece. I know no Greek at all. It's snowing really heavily on like a mountainside. If I sort of lose the group or something like that, I've got no phone signal. I'm like, actually, that's the start of a really cool adventure.
Yeah.
And I probably would have a brilliant day. But so they choose places like Portugal. It's, you know, you're got more chance of having good weather than you have in the UK during the winter. But also it doesn't cost, you know, as much as flying everyone out to Africa or Australia or something where you're guaranteed good weather.
Yeah, that's right. In those areas in winter, typically good weather, quiet roads and endless twisties and lots of trails.
Mate, I was so looking forward to getting out and riding this bike on those.
Sorry to move you on.
Yeah, move me on.
Just cut in and move on.
I was about to talk about my steak dinner. But
So good dinner. Fed and watered, nice hotel room. What happens the following morning?
So it's always an early start. So it's a really good idea not to drink too much the night before.
Absolutely.
I kind of fell into that trap on my first bike launch and woke up with a pretty dreadful hangover. So my kind of rule is maybe a glass of wine or two with dinner the night before. Enjoy it. Have a great chat with the folks from Honda and also the other bike journos who are a great bunch. And typically I get up about 6:30. Shower, sort myself out, get all my kit together, and then I try and get down to the bikes, which are lined up outside the hotel a good hour before we're due to meet. That gives me a chance to do some social media stuff on Facebook and Instagram, do a little bit of filming. If I can find someone who's telling me which is my bike for the day, because we have an allotted bike, it means I've got time to set up our GoPro cameras on there, and just not be in a mad rush, because you know what it's like being a mad rush when you're even if you're a group of mates and you're trying to get your gear on and your helmet down and everyone wants to
go. Your preparation sounds a lot better than mine, let's put it that way.
Is it? Yeah, yeah. I hate being that guy who's last and like you're sweating and you're fumbling with your helmet strap.
Trying to put your glove on.
That's it.
So it's quite a sight, isn't it? When you come out of the hotel in the morning and they're lined up. I mean, you probably had, what, 12, 13, 14?
Yeah, I think there were 15 Trans-Alps in the end and a couple of Africa Twins. Yeah,
and it's quite a sight.
Oh, mate, it's brilliant. It really is. Especially when they start them all up. It was weird. They went through them about an hour before, half an hour before, turned them all on and kind of warmed them up, which isn't something you necessarily get with bikes these days, is it? So, but it sounded great. The people staying in the hotel who weren't part of the Honda group must have hated it because they had a lot of noise that morning. But everyone basically jumps on, revs their engines and heads off. And as you go out of that hotel drive and onto the roads, it's such a thrilling experience. Because I don't know about you, but I don't ride with big groups ever. You know, as adventure bikers, bike tourers, it tends to be sort of a solo or a small group, doesn't it? But
occasionally. So one that comes to mind straight away is when we go over to the ABR Island rally.
Yep.
And there's probably a group of, it can be up to like 30 people, really, isn't it? And there is something about riding out with a big group of people and just being part of that. It's like an organism going down the road. Different people and moving parts. And it's a cool experience. And on press launches, right, you've got a lead rider and your tail rider. And the lead rider is usually, one, they know the roads very well because Honda goes out there and scopes out the roads and plans where they're going to take the route and stuff like that. But they tend to be very, very good riders as well.
And the standard of riding on these things is that the top end guys are just sensational. Yeah. But it's a real mixed bag of riding as well. And I kind of, these days, not so much when I started, to be honest with you, but these days I tend to find myself in the middle-ish of the pack. But I remember my first launch I went on, I was just... didn't think about it, sort of jumped on the bike, hustled my way to like second or third in line, and just had guys that are like raced the Isle of Man TT behind me, or you know, guys were professional road racers before they turned into journalists. Whereas, you know, I got into adventure bike rider because I like to tour abroad on my motorbike, and it was it was a rude awakening. So I tend to let sort of like a few of the guys go, the ones that want to up the pace go really fast, and tend to sit in the middle of the pack and relax and enjoy the spirited pace. But, you know, I'm not constantly worrying about if there's someone behind me. You know, usually the guys around me are similar level of riding. So,
yeah, it can get a bit spicy, can't it?
Yeah. Test ride launches are, I think spirited is the word. And that's not always a good thing because, you know, if you're focusing on riding so much that you don't get to play around with the various bits of the bike, I think, you know, you can miss a lot of stuff, which is why at the briefings, they always say ride your own ride, which sounds really obvious, but you know, you're there to do a job. You're there to check out this bike. So, and it's easy to get caught up in the thrill and the exhilaration of like being in this group of brilliant riders. And I love it. You know, whenever I follow a fellow journalist, Mossy, who is a brilliant rider, and I love following his lines because he's you know, he raced the Isle of Man TT, and I learn every time I follow him, but I'm not there to learn to be a better rider. So, you know, I will drop back, chill, check out, you know, fiddle with the various different buttons and figure out the menus and stuff like that, then catch up. And the guys who run the Honda launches are very, very good. It's kind of Ian Dew and his team.
Right, yeah.
And those guys David are just... David Dew, sorry. Yes. It was... Yeah, Ian, you know him well, Ian's right? Honda's main VR man, isn't he? Yeah, David. And David's team are just brilliant. They're really good. They had riders in the middle, riders at the back. You know, Jeff was chilling at the back, another journalist, as he often does. And it was, it was a thoroughly enjoyable experience, but does give you time to push the bike as hard as you want, but also relax and check it out what it's going to be like on a day-to-day basis.
Exactly. And so you get on the bike, you get to grips with it, you fiddle with the buttons. What else are you looking for?
That's it. Yeah, no, just have a lovely day. In my mind, I'm always thinking, what is this bike going to be like to live with on a day-to-day basis? So, like Honda and all the other manufacturers, they fly us out to beautiful places. You know, they almost guarantee sunshine, although they didn't fully on this trip. They give us beautiful roads to ride because they want us to have a brilliant experience on this bike. But in my mind, I'm always thinking, what's it going to be like on the A46 as I commute to work in winter? What's it going to be like barreling down the M5 of a weekend when I'm shooting down to Cornwall? But also, what's it going to be like when I'm cruising through the Alps on a summer tour or things like that? So in my mind, I'm always keeping an eye on how it performs that way. So, but basics to begin with, seating position. Yeah. You know, that's what I tend to do. A little shakedown, the early few miles. The pace is relatively easy to give you a chance to get used to the seating position, the reach to the bars, play around with the menus, fiddle with the screen,
the leg bend angle.
Yeah. Which all those sort of things that kind of mainly comfort. What's it going to be like and stuff like that. And that's kind of what I tend to do earlier on. Then usually we'll go through a town or something like that, head up into the hills, hit the twisties. That's my chance to put it in sport mode, really get a feel for kind of the engine, the throttle response, the handling. You know, this has got a big 21-inch front wheel. Mm-hmm. How does it nip into turns or you know, does it glide? Give you a real chance to kind of have a feel for the suspension as well. Now, this bike doesn't have various electronic suspension modes, but if they do, as we're hooning it through the twisties, I'll have a play, you know, the brakes as well, you know, as we're braking for turns relatively fast, you know, is there a huge amount of fork dive? And then as I kind of power through the turn, am I wallowing? Is the suspension wallowing around? And all those different aspects of the bike.
A lot to think about, isn't
there?
It's not just, and there is a bit of a misconception with people who don't necessarily know what goes on press launches or why you're even there or what the purpose of it is. It's not just a jolly. Although it might be fun, it's not just a jolly. You are constantly thinking about things, making notes, mental notes. And then you have to remember all that when you get off the bike and try and put it into a coherent review.
That's it. Which is actually one of my favourite parts of it is sitting back here. And before we started recording, I was actually halfway through my review of the Trans Alp for the next issue of Adventure Bike Rider magazine. But that's going to be May-June issue, isn't it? Yeah. And I like the fact that I get the chance to digest what I've done, think about it, and then write 2,500 words about it. And I feel really privileged to work for ABR, where I can really put that time, thought, an effort into crafting something like that. Whereas, you know, some of the guys, you know, they have to because of deadlines, write a review on the plane on the way back. And man, they're amazing for doing it. So, yeah. But I do feel in a very privileged position to really give a thoughtful, knowledgeable, carefully crafted review.
Do you ever leave it too long?
Totally. Because it can be, this launch was perfect for me because it came just after deadline for the latest issue of ABR.
There it is.
Which is here, which is, yeah. I don't know, we're recording this at in early March, so being available anytime now,
yeah,
really?
Now-ish.
Yeah, yeah. So I haven't had to come back and race to jump into other projects or things like that. But yeah, sometimes, you know, you've been on launches, I come back, there's a week to go until deadline, and I've got a magazine to put out, so I have to put the review back.
Yeah.
And it is, trickier, but also having a bit of time to digest what's happened and going back to your notes, going back to the videos and the photos can give you a different perspective. And I think,
sorry, no, you go ahead. I'll go ahead.
You'll go.
I was just going to say, that's where Honda's little flip book, this is the first time I've seen that much effort put into a launch.
Yeah, it's great, isn't it?
But that's that little flip book with the route on there, I imagine will really help with recalling, I remember that bend, or I remember that road where I felt this on the bike, that on the bike.
Yeah.
Okay, so what about if when you're out there on these roads in the nice sunshine, drinking nice beer and eating nice food, you're always thinking, I wonder what it's like to ride on the M25 or on the old A road to work. Why don't they just do press launches in the UK?
One reason, the pictures would look awful. No, they do sometimes do press launches in the UK, don't they? You did, Alan, who the founder of ABR, did one of the BMW GS launches in Wales,
GSA,
didn't he?
I think, a long time ago.
Every now and then they do. I think one of the reasons is because the pictures don't look as good.
No.
But also, they want us to have a brilliant time. You know, the PR's job is to get as much positive coverage of a bike as possible. So not only do they want it to look incredible in the motorcycle magazines, online, on the YouTube videos, and having that bike in an incredible setting that people dream about of riding a location helps sell the dream of the adventure bike. Whereas if there's a picture of the bike on the M25, the bike can look incredible, but it's not going to help sell the dream.
Can you imagine
front
cover of ABR?
M25. Yeah, we should try it one time. We should. But so it's really important to stay grounded, but also not ignore the fact that these bikes, a lot of people buy adventure bikes to travel. That's why I got into adventure biking. So they will be ridden in these areas. People will travel them on beautiful roads, but you do have to keep in mind that, you know, if it's a day-to-day bike as well, you're going to get bad weather, which is why actually I like a bit of mixed conditions on a launch. So the Transalp launch, we had rain in the morning and it was just great. It was a bit cold. It was a bit miserable. And it was great to get a feel for the weather protection. It was great to get a feel for the tire grip. It was great to get a feel for the rain mode, which was very, very... the throttle response was very, very neutered, but I'm sure we'll get into that in a minute.
Yeah.
And it's nice to have mixed conditions. The Suzuki launch I went on 3 weeks before in the snow was a bit much, to be honest with you.
Too much.
But it was fun. It was an adventure. But I did go to a launch for Suzuki in Scotland a couple of years back. Do you remember that? The GSX S1000 GT. The weather was awful. It was February, March time, and one of the best launches I've ever been on because we had two solid days of riding and big miles, brilliant landscapes, got to test the bike in all conditions. And it was just fantastic because all we did was ride.
That's cool. And on that Suzuki launch, you probably would have stayed predominantly with the Transalp, it's a bit more, you know, there is an off-road element in there. So how does the manufacturer work in that when you're out on a launch?
Yeah, so the guys, David and his team, had the launch scouted out beforehand. You know, they're pros at doing this. So they know various parts of the world. But one of their keys to success as well that they told me was they always get local riders involved. So we had a local guy who's, I think he runs a local tour company or something like that as part of the rider or the riding team.
Yeah.
So he knew some great places. So they actually took us on a stretch of trail it was a road. It was a dirt road, but it was, you know, a rugged dirt road that was formed part of the Dakar Rally route the Dakar Rally went from Lisbon.
Awesome.
I don't know how long. I'm not up on my Dakar Rally history too much, but which was really cool to hear. Now, generally at motorcycle launches, the off-road riding isn't particularly hardcore. It isn't particularly rugged, unless it's very much an off-road focused bike. And they tend to reflect the intended use of the bike. Now, the Transalp is very much a road-focused bike that can do a few trails.
Yep.
Trails is my Essex accent coming out there.
Trails in Wales.
Trails, yeah. And so we rode for about 5 miles on this kind of off-road trail stroke dirt road. And it was, yeah, it was great. You know, it was, for the intended, for what most people do with the Transalp, it was superb. And it just formed part of the route. So it was quite naturally flowed through. We stopped, did some photos and various things like that, and just had a thoroughly nice time. Would have been great if it was a bit longer, but on bike launches, the off-road sections don't tend to be that long.
No.
Unless you're Alan, ABR founder in South Africa at the moment on the Husqvarna Norden launch. Right? And that looks like some serious riding off-road.
If I'm not wrong, they've had a whole day of off-road, right?
Well, even basically, more than that, I think. The sand looked deep.
Yeah. Yeah, it looks amazing. So, yeah, KTM seemed to be quite hot on emphasizing the off-road side of that.
Yeah.
I remember there was a launch to Peru. It must have been 6 years ago. 5-6 years ago. And that was just pretty much full-on off-road.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm not going to name any names, but there are definitely some launches where the off-road... It's basically a gravel car park.
Oh, yeah, you could do...
Just stop for a photo on and then that's it.
Yeah, and I'm always completely honest about that as well. Like, I'm not here to pull the wool over anyone's eyes. You know, if we've only been given half a kilometre or a kilometre to ride on a trail, I always put that in my review and always caveat the fact that got a fair amount of experience on bikes, so I can I understand what's needed for a bike to perform well off-road. Yeah. Even though I always say I'm a very average off-road rider, but if we're only doing half a mile or we're doing a kilometre, then we'll say it. You know, we haven't tested it for its full capacity. But this was about 5 miles. It was kind of on the lighter siding of green laning, I'd say, with kind of a few steep bits, a couple of climbs, loose surfaces.
What you'd imagine the Transalp was made for.
Yeah, it had been raining, so it was a slippery surface, and it was fun, really good fun.
Nice. So Fine. The other bit of bike launches is the photo stops.
It is,
which I always find quite entertaining in a way, because you get to see how each person sort of sets up for their photos that they're in that appear in the magazines, and you know, people have little poses where they're like leaning over on the bike and stuff like that. And the reality is, we're going quite slow, aren't we?
It is. And a big part of, and I always put these up on social media when I'm away, because I think it's a nice behind the scenes thing. And a big part of bike launch is being sat by the side of the road in a little gaggle of 10 to 15 motorbikes waiting for your turn to go up a bit of road and then down again and then waiting to go again. Because you do, and I get it, you need photos, you need video for magazines, for YouTube channels and so forth. So we did a fair few on this launch. It was a good mix, to be honest with you, of spending plenty of time. I think the total mileage was 150 miles.
That's decent.
Yeah, it was. We did, I think, 3 or 4 photo stops. Nice. But yeah, it is interesting. It's a great, I always use it as a great test of how easy a bike is to maneuver around slowly. So it's the car park test. You know, as we all know, the majority of people drop bikes in car parks or in their driveway, you know, because it's maneuvering around top heavy bikes or whatnot. So for me, it's a great opportunity, you know, tight turns in the road or a little gravel kind of off, you know, it's a bit of lay-by or something off the road. You've got to maneuver the bikes around in small spaces. And it's a great test of that. It's a great test to see how people with different heights cope with the bike as well. Yeah. You know, shorter riders, can they get their feet down? Are they struggling? But it is quite funny when you go for the photo run and some people, I'm pretty chilled, accelerate away, you know, kind of try and time the first bend so I've got a nice line so people don't point out that I've done the wrong line or something like that in the magazine. Some people just rag the hell out of the bike and will just hoon it down. It depends, you know, your style of riding. My attitude is I see very few people hanging off the side of an adventure bike in a way that you would a MotoGP bike. So why am I going to hang off the side of the bike with my knee nearly scraping the ground for Adventure Bike Rider magazine? I'm not.
No, exactly. Just wouldn't look right, would it?
Yeah.
Just wouldn't look right. Okay, so I think we covered the most of the most parts of the launch, unless you've got anything you want to add.
No, it's just the most challenging bit for me, to be honest with you, is you get back to the hotel and immediately you're thrust in front of a camera. And it's we call them pieces to camera, and it's the bits where you see the journalist stood in front of the bike, looking a bit disheveled, sweaty, and knackered at the end of the day, and
they go a bit shell shocked.
Yeah, and you know you all line up, and they say go, and you've got to say things, and you've got like a very nice PR man or woman there, like kind of listening in. You've you know had a great time with all weekend, and you've got to risk breaking those bonds of friendship. You know, you've got to say, if you don't like something, you've got to say you don't like it. But it is quite a challenge, mainly just because I'm knackered. And you've kind of got to be coherent and put forward this piece to camera, which is why you'll see a lot of people come back. The bike reviews will be someone sat in a studio in the UK because they've had a chance to gather their thoughts. They've had a chance to think about what they want to say rather than kind of just burbling stuff.
Yeah, I mean, you're very good at it.
Thank you very much.
You do stand in front of a bike and talk from the top of your head very well, and it's usually coherent.
It's the joy of editing. For me, if I was,
just one of my worst nightmares, actually, just coming up off the bike and someone sticking a camera in my face and saying, tell us what you think about it. It's a bike.
It can be tricky. What I tend to do is about half an hour before we get back or 45 minutes before we get back, or I think we're going to, I'll catch up with someone in the team and say, how long have we got to go? And as I'm riding, I'll be going, actually talking into my helmet, like, what am I going to say for the piece to camera? How do I get something eloquent across about this bike that I've only ridden for a day, you know, and so forth. So it's
usually at that point I'm singing.
You're humming, thinking about donuts. But also, you know, another challenging part of a launch is these days we do a lot of video.
Yeah.
Check out the ABR's YouTube channel because it's brilliant. And there will be a result, review of the Trans Alp
coming soon.
You That's it, yeah. So it's kind of talking to the camera and the GoPro on your helmet because I know that Dan, our editor, stroke producer, stroke all-round good egg sometimes, will be editing that together, and if I can give him something worthwhile
to use
while I'm riding along, you know, that's great for him. But it's quite difficult, I find, riding fast and reviewing a bike at the same time. Yeah. It just takes up too much of my brain capacity.
Men can't multitask, is that
thing, It's tough, man. I'm a man. I can't multitask. And I can ride at a relatively swift pace, but, you know, relaxed, and then talk about the bike. But bike launches are swift.
Yeah.
And so at one point I found myself coming into a corner, talking about something on the bike. I look down, I'm in first gear, my clutch is in. I'm doing like 40 miles an hour. And I'm just like, this is just stupid. So I think I said into the camera, Dan, I'm going to shut up for a bit. I just need to catch up with the guys ahead, think and just ride the bike. But the joy. But it's great fun. Brilliant fun.
Yeah, it is. It's a great part of the job, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's something we're very lucky to do.
Mm.
Well, now let's talk about the actual bike.
The actual bike,
The Honda XL750 Trans Alp, which
was the one
revealed by Honda at the end of 2022. God, my years have gone completely. I still think it's like 2020.
Yeah.
2022.
Last year, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. At EICMA?
Was it EICMA? No idea.
One of those.
It was on my computer screen.
Yeah. And Honda brought it to Motorcycle Live at the NEC, where they had one that you could sit on and look at. And for many people, that was the first time they got to actually see the bike. To me, it looked a bit like a big CB500X, mainly because of that front headlight. Don't know what you think about that.
Yeah, I think styling-wise, you know what? I was just writing, as I said, my review for the magazine, and I got to the styling section, what it looks like.
Yeah.
And I think I said, I think it's a good-looking bike. But I think Honda's designers have played it very safe.
Mm.
There's nothing striking about it. There's nothing that stands out. You know, if you compare it to the new V-Strom 800 DE, like the looks or not like the looks, it's striking. You know, some people will love it. Some people, it'll be a Marmite bike. Whereas I think the Honda looks-wise is they've designed it to appeal to as many people as possible. I think they've kind of designed it not to offend, which sounds really harsh.
Yeah, I think you're probably right.
But it's a nice looking machine. But yeah, that front headlight looks like it's straight off the 500X.
Yeah.
The kind of the sculpting fairing is a little bit smoother than the 500, but overall it just looks like a more substantial version of that. Now, you look at it, it looks like a Honda. And yeah. I think, you know, they're probably trying to get that look, that kind of visual narrative all the way through their bikes, because, you know, you've got the NC750 and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But it's not quite as eye-catching as, say, an Africa Twin, is it, or something like that?
No, to me it's a bit... In the same, do you remember the NT1100? We kind of termed it like a stealth bike.
Yeah,
like it's one you scan in the car park and you look at it, but you don't really realize you've looked at it.
Yep,
kind of a bit like that. But anyway, actually thinking about it, let's not go too much into the bike because we're going to be. You've got your full review coming out in the magazine.
In the magazine,
May June edition. But also, there's the video going up on YouTube that everyone can watch.
Yeah, that should. By the time you listen to this, it should be up there already.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hopefully. But for the purpose of this, and I'm going to put you on the spot here, what are your top five takeaways of riding the Transalp?
Okay. This is like rabbit in the headlights moment. Yeah. Post-ride, stand in front of a camera for the pieces to camera. Top five takeaways. Do you know what? This is a really difficult bike to do that with because nothing stands out. Which is both...
So that's one point.
Yeah, which is a compliment and perhaps a criticism. And look, when we had the presentation, Honda said that basically they've designed it to appeal to as many people as possible. Mm. So they designed it to be, you know, good at commuting, good at touring, good at carving through the twisties, yeah. and capable off-road. So they've designed it to do everything.
Do you think that's a bit of a risky move, maybe? You know, the whole thing of marketing and all that and sales is you can't appeal to everyone.
Yeah, no, you'd think that, wouldn't you? And there's been a few comments on Facebook that have even used the word bland. Now, I don't agree with that. I don't think it's a bland bike at all. But what you've got to remember is Honda is very, very good at selling motorbikes. It sells more motorbikes across the world than anyone else. And even if you discount the 125 market and the smaller capacity market, particularly in the Far East and wider Europe, they still sell a lot of bikes. So they know what they're doing. Yeah. But I guess my first takeaway would be linked to that, would be the engine.
Okay.
In that it's such a versatile engine. Now, it doesn't growl and roar like the Africa Twin. And actually, I think the Africa Twin has a huge amount of character solely because of that engine. I was looking on Facebook today and someone commented, oh, the Africa Twin's got no character. And so I couldn't agree less. That 1100 engine is just wonderful.
It's full of it, isn't it?
Talky, loud, it vibrates wonderfully. Anyway, the Transalp engine isn't like that. So 755cc, 91 brake horsepower, 75 newton meters of torque. There's plenty of poke there.
Yep.
But it's just so versatile. So kind of during one relatively long section, I didn't get out of second gear. I was hitting the rev limiter, darting between turns, but because it was very twisty terrain you dream about riding, I was just remained in second gear all the time. And the engine can do that. But if you're on the motorway, if you're on first roads, it's also really great at relaxed cruising in higher gears. It's really smooth at low speeds. It's such a versatile engine that I think that's probably the standout quality of the bike for me.
Yeah. Do you reckon it feels, because it's 750 basically, isn't it? Well, I don't know what specifically it is, probably like 749 or something.
Or 755 XL.
Have a look on your spec sheet.
Have a look. Yeah, my spec sheet. There we go.
So my question was basically going to be, does it feel like a smaller bike?
755cc.
755, there we go.
I knew it. In terms of the engine, yes.
Yeah.
So the first thing I notice, and I don't see this as a criticism at all, but you don't get the gut thump of acceleration that you would on a larger motorcycle.
Yeah.
Obviously, something like the GSA behind me, a Multistrada, an Africa Twin. You know,
basically anything above 1,000cc.
You know, you twist the Athacrin throttle and it will go. You don't expect that from a smaller engine, but it also doesn't have quite the blast of acceleration that you'd get on, say, a KTM 890 Adventure or a Triumph Tiger 900. Again, larger machines, but still in that mid-weight class. The Transalp very much reminded me of the smooth throttle response and the smooth progressive acceleration you might get on the Tenere.
Right.
So completely unintimidating.
No bad thing, though, either. Right?
Ah, it's great. There's enough power there to do everything you want, but you don't have that gut punch thrill.
Yeah, that's going to scare you.
But yeah, that's it. But you know, it's fast. It's pretty quick.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, so it's smooth, progressive. Put it in sport mode. It's got a bit of bite. Yeah. To be honest, with an engine that size, I kept it in sport mode the vast majority of the time, which is strange for me because I usually whack a bike in tour and leave it there, to be honest with you, if I've got a long-termer or something like that. But yeah, the engine is great. Second of your top five, cheers for this, would be probably the handling. Okay. Handling, light, agile. It might seem strange to have that 21-inch front, 18-inch wheel setup on the bike, which is very much off-road focused. For a bike that really, I think, is more focused to road touring, commuting, with a bit of light off-roading thrown in. So it's I don't always think the Transalp knows quite what it is. But even with that big front wheel setup, it handles nicely. Nudge a counter steer, you're in. I personally like the feel of a 21-inch front wheel compared to, say, a 17-inch one. The response on the bars might not be as quick. It might not be as pin sharp. But it's nice. I like the way the bike kind of glides into turns. And it was certainly responsive. Third seating position.
Yeah,
comfortable, upright, adventure bike stance. I love the fact that I'm going to take this as number four as well. We come to three. Number four, I like the fact that the 850mm seat height meant I could get both feet firmly on the ground with leg bend to spare.
Nice. How tall are you?
6 foot or just under. Around 6 foot. I think I've got like a 32-33 centimeter. Inch inseam, I'm going beyond my knowledge there, but yeah, it's nice to be able to plant your feet firmly on the ground. There is a lower seat height option which takes it down to I think 810-820mm, but you'll have to buy it.
So what's the seat height without that?
850.
Right, so accessible,
that's great. But despite having that low seat height, I had plenty of kind of room for my legs. It was quite a relaxed angle, nice natural reach to the bars. It's very much that position that you could spend all day touring on and be perfectly happy.
Okay, and one of the things I love about adventure bikes is their road presence, which is why I love the GS Adventure. It's why I love the Multistrada Enduro. Basically, for me, the bigger the bike, the better. I just love being on something that big.
Nice.
Calm down.
I've heard that about you.
And it tends to be why I kind of shy away from the midweight bikes, because they just feel a little bit small underneath me. You know, I'm 6'2" and 18.5 stone.
Solid muscle.
Mostly muscle. Yep. You know, I've probably got about 2 pounds of fat that I carry, but
mate, I've seen you with a shirt off. It's an amazing sight. Right?
Cheeseboard, cheese grater abs. Yeah,
my wife should worry. She really should.
But for me, well, you tell me. Do you think I would like as someone who prefers big bikes and likes big bikes? Does the Transalp offer a kind of road presence and that feeling underneath you that a big bike offers, or not?
No, you would be whinging about it. You really, I can imagine it now. Yeah, it's a great bike, but it's too small.
Too small.
But it doesn't feel like a small bike. I personally, given the choice, would opt for a mid-size adventure bike over a larger one.
Yeah.
Depending if I'm riding solo. Yeah, because I'm a wimp. Yeah. Depending on the circumstances, two up long distance touring, the GSA is the bike I chose to go to France with this year. But general road riding on my own, I'd go mid-size. And the Transalp feels great. So it's got a lot of presence. It's not a small machine. It's a decent sized machine. Mm. When you get on it, it doesn't feel intimidating. It doesn't feel oversized. It feels lightweight. And I think that's a real bonus for everyone apart from yourself or people like that. And I think it's one of those bikes that I could see being a really good first big adventure bike. Right. You know, if you're moving up from a 125 or you want to move up from, I don't know, KTM 390 or a CB500X, you want a bit of extra power, but you don't feel ready for the big machine. You know, conversely, if you're moving down, don't want a massive adventure bike anymore, but you want something with enough power and enough comfort still to cover decent distances. And, yeah, it's a really comfortable, enjoyable bike to cover distances on. Yeah. I'd happily go on tour with it.
Nice. So 0.5, what's that?
Yeah, I'm struggling to think of 0.5 now. And this is probably one of the criticisms that the bike might come under, is that nothing really does stand out, which I guess could be one of my favorite things about it, is that as an overall package, I was racking my brain to try and think of something I didn't like. And I couldn't really, to be honest with you. The screen isn't adjustable with one hand while you're riding, which annoys the hell out of me. I know it doesn't annoy the hell out of everyone, judging by some of the YouTube comments we've got lately. So all power to you if you've reached the screen sweet spot. But I do change my screen up and down on the motorway when I'm riding off road or whatnot, depending on the weather.
It's nice to be able to do, right?
Yeah, you need tools to do that. But apart from that, everything on the bike just gels. It works. It's just a really well put together, well engineered machine. Just doesn't stand out from the crowd. I don't think people who buy it will care. I see it as a bike that, when I was recording the script for our video review, which is going to be up on YouTube, I said it's a bike for people who ride, which sounds really a complete cop-out. But it's for people who ride a lot. I know. It's for people who ride loads. Someone that's going to commute every day. Someone that's going to cover big distances. Who a bike is a tool for transport.
Workhorse, right?
Yeah, as well. But I don't think we can just say that. As well as a passion and a hobby. I think it's the bike that you'll get huge thrills from riding over Alpine passes, but it's a bike that will serve you very, very well on the day-to-day commute. And
what's it in terms of like pricing? What are we looking at?
Mate, it's just under 9,500, which is such good value for that machine. Now, there's been a few rumblings that it doesn't have a cruise control option, which is a shame. Not that I can see. Which is a shame. It doesn't come with heated grips.
As standard,
you can have the option. You know, I don't know. Unlike something like the NC1100, which has kind of luggage on it now, a few things like it. But for £9,500, when you look at today's market for that bike, I think represents brilliant value. Yeah,
so that is a great value for money. It's a very, very good price point as well. And I think we've kind of, you mentioned the NT1100 from Honda. 11999. Which comes with everything. I think that bike kind of spoiled me in terms of what I expect from a motorcycle. It's not normal to get heated grips and panniers and center stand and cruise control and everything like that as standard with a motorcycle. So you kind of forgive that on a £9,000 bike.
I think so. And just I've heard some rumblings as well about, not another parallel twin engine, and so forth, and where's the character and stuff like that. But you're not buying this bike for that. You're buying it for the fact that it's an engine that performs very well, and it's a Honda. It's going to be super reliable.
Sounded nice on the video.
It sounds pretty good, yeah. It's kind of got this sort of burble that you start with, and then it's sort of a high-pitched howl's probably going a bit far, but it's a cracking sounding machine. And it's great for me. It's great value for money, and it's a bike that I would buy. And I don't say that about all the bikes
it's a real rider's bike.
It's a bike that I would use. Yeah, it's a bike to ride. Not going to live that one down, but 100% it's a bike that I would buy and use a hell of a lot.
For everything, right.
I don't think you'll see many Trans Alp secondhand for sale with like 1,500 miles, 2,000 miles on the clock. I think it's a bike that people are going to use and get a lot of pleasure out of.
So your 5 points, engine?
I can't remember.
I'm not going to. Engine?
Handling,
comfort, basically.
Comfort, yeah. Seat height was in there. Seat height.
And
it's an overall package.
It's not.
And it's great value for money. I'll have that one in there. I'll take that one from you.
That's five. Yeah. Okay. That's cool. I mean, that leads nicely into the review that you filmed, which is going to be up on YouTube. So we'll now dive into, we've got a few questions from people on Facebook.
Yeah, it was Facebook, because whenever away I do as much social media as I can while I'm on the road. It can be tricky, but these are just some of the comments, some of the questions, and some of the opinions that people gave below the photos and video I popped up.
So we'll rattle through these. Bit of a quick fire question.
Cool.
Round, right? So Mike Hall asks, can we take one out at the Adventure Bike Rider Festival, which is 23rd to 25th of June this year?
The magnificent Ragley Hall Estate in Warwickshire.
Ragley Hall Estate.
Tickets still available at
www.abrfestival.com.
But it does sell out every year, so please don't hang around. Seriously, don't hang around.
Yeah, no, exactly.
But yes, yeah, it is going to be available to ride, as far as I know, at the moment. So yeah, basically speaking to the guys from Honda at the launch, they said yes, the bikes are due in the country at a certain time. I think there's talk of them being available in dealerships in April, perhaps. Mm-hmm. As with any of these things, with these kind of supply chains, there can be a little bit of movement, but they were.
The hope is that it's going to be there.
I would say far more than hope. They were as certain as they can be that, yes, if everything goes right, it's going to be there. If a few things go wrong, it's going to be there. There's an utter catastrophe. That could be the only reason.
And they're offering road rideouts.
That's the plan at the moment, to offer road rideouts on the Transalp, off-road on the Africa Twin. Again, that might change. You know, they're looking at planning the festival as we speak.
So, yeah, if you want to ride the... Well, I won't go that far because it's not 100% confirmed, is it? But yeah.
I would say, yep, it's going
to
be there.
Okay, well, come to the ABR Festival.
I'd back it. Yeah, yeah.
And even if you don't want to ride the Transalp, come to the ABR Festival because you can ride
lots of other bikes to ride.
Mick Hargreaves asks, why tubed tyres? It's the only thing that puts me off.
Yeah, puts me off as well, I have to admit. Now, there's the old saying that if you ride off-road a lot, a tube tyre is better for a number of reasons. But, you know, one of the reasons being if you twist a rim or something like that, if you've got a tyre without tubes on, your day could be over and you're looking for someone to come along in a truck to help you get out of there. In reality, I think for what this bike is going to be used for most of the time, tubeless tyres would have been better for the simple reason if you get a puncture, you can just plug it in 5-10 minutes. It's easy to do by the roadside. You don't have to carry a lever set with you. I don't know why Honda has done this. Now, the answer they gave was it works better with the bike for better performance. And there are benefits to tubes, but for me, a bike focused on commuting and touring with a bit of off-road should really have tubeless just for the convenience.
Yeah, which is what John Gonshaw goes in to say, is tubeless tyres and cruise control would be a big plus.
Yeah, cruise control... Yes, I guess. Cruise control isn't something I use much in England. I use it abroad more. The roads are quiet. For me, cruise control, take it or leave it, to be honest with you. You know, especially on a bike of that
do you
power.
Do you think you'd buy the CB Fighter, the Transalp?
The Transalp.
And not get the cruise control put on?
Yes, yeah. Yeah, I would, yeah. There we go. That's it. Different opinions. Some people will be really quick at changing a tube out on a bike and want that versatility, but they won't be bothered about cruising along motorways for five hours at a time and want cruise control.
It is a good point.
It's down to the individual. It really is.
Non-adaptive cruise control on UK roads is only good at midnight.
I very rarely use it, yeah.
Quentin Ross says, why would you buy this over a CB500X?
Why would you indeed? I did actually own a CB500X.
You did, yeah.
Commuted across London on it. Brilliant bike, brilliant commuter. Potentially one of the best city commuters money can buy, I would say. Great bike. But it's bigger, it's more comfortable. I always think the 500X always strikes me as kind of like a three-quarter size bike. The dimensions are smaller.
Yeah.
But the Transalp, so it's more comfortable, it's bigger, it's more powerful. It's got that 21-inch, 18-inch wheel setup, which is going to roll over bumps off-road better. And overall, it's a more satisfying bike to ride.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's a good answer there.
Good. I thought this was quick fire. But.
Yeah. Adam Padam, see. Sorry. I guess.
Was this Adam, my typing?
Adam Padam, see? Says, looks good. I'm 6'5" with a 36-inch inseam.
Big lad.
That's a big lad.
Big lad, yeah.
So we'll see if it fits once it hits the dealership.
He will see if it fits.
it's not really a question.
No. I fear he may be a little hunched on it.
Yeah.
His knees might be a little high, but give it a try. It's a decent sized bike. Your eyes are watering like you're about to crack up.
No, I'm good. I got it.
It's always a sign. I think Honda have really tried to make it accessible for as many people as possible. So it is going to be suitable for shorter riders. If you are 6'3", 4", 5", you may find you're a little bit hunched on it, but you know, you'd be very happy on an Africa Twin or a GS, wouldn't you?
Yeah. So Dan Allen says, hopefully they'll do a more aggressive rally version with longer suspension and better ground clearance. That would be cool.
It would be cool, yeah. And I think when the Transat was first announced, a lot of people thought, and I was as well, oh, it's basically the midweight Africa Twin. Mm. It's really not. I don't think the Transat ever was a medium-sized Africa Twin, although the Africa Twin was smaller back then as well, wasn't it? But I don't think by the time it was discontinued in 2012, the Transat was very much an adventure road tourer in my eyes, and it very much looked like that. This continues that on. It's a Transalp. They've not tried to make a small Africa Twin. I think if they tried to make a smaller Africa Twin, it would be more rugged. It would be more off-road focused. Whereas the Transalp, I think, is more for people who want to explore by bike, who want to use it daily, but do want to do a few
it's
lanes
a different
as
bike,
well.
Right?
It is a different bike. So you'll be disappointed if you're expecting a mini Africa Twin, but actually give the bike a ride and I don't think you will be disappointed. And, you know, the suspension travels with 200 at the front, 190 at the rear. That's a decent amount for doing, light trails. Ground clearance is 210 millimeters. It's not a huge amount, but again, for doing a few light green lanes, it's fine. The pipes are a bit exposed. The exhaust is relatively low. All these things add up to the fact that, you know, Honda have designed this for light trails, mostly road work.
Sure. Which is, if you believe what they say, is where most bikes stay.
I think in the UK, particularly, most adventure bikes spend the majority of their time on the road. I think when you look to America and maybe Africa and wider Europe, it can be a bit different. But for the UK market, it's kind of perfect, to be honest with you.
Paul Delta says, to me, an adventure bike isn't an overweight enduro. Adventuring is about exploring to me, or touring, if you will. Gravel, dirt, etc. You can do any on any bike with decent tyres. This Transalp will sell like butter.
I think I'd get on very well this chap, because that's pretty much what I just said, wasn't it? Like, I
can sell like butter, a phrase.
Sell like butter. Has there been a rush on butter? I don't know, but I kind of agree with that in that that's what this bike will do well.
Yeah.
I'd happily go off and explore on
it's a bike for the masses.
And it's one of those, it's smaller, it's 210 kilograms, which isn't light for a motorbike, but it's relatively light for an adventure bike.
Yeah.
And so it is easy to pick up. If you've got a load of luggage on there and you're trying to find your way across a rocky trail, you can get both your feet down to steady yourself, you know, it's one of those bikes. But I'm always aware of saying that adventure biking is different for everyone. There's people out there who will jump on their GS and hit the dirt loads. And I think they're probably in the minority, but that's adventure biking for them. For other people, they will never leave the blacktop.
For Wim Vanderput, he says, the Transalp looks like the perfect fit for what I'm looking for. 10% mild off-road, but mostly on-road travel. Bigger and more powerful CB500X, which is basically what you're just saying.
Well, we should offer Wim a job, to be honest with you.
He's just done your review there in two lines.
We're going to have a lot of pictures in the magazine review.
Moving on to Adam Fenner, which says, if Bland were the personification of a motorcycle, this would be it.
Harsh. Yeah, I think I mentioned I'd seen the word Bland bandied about online a few times, and again, it's in the beauty is in the eye of the beholder. I'm assuming, what's the chap's name?
Adam.
I'm assuming Adam hasn't ridden it yet because it's not available in the UK. If you have Adam, I'm sorry. From looks alone, I could understand where you might get that. It's a very pleasant looking machine, isn't it? But it's certainly not bland to ride. Yep. One aspect doesn't stand out, but it is a very, very engaging, fun, I'd say go as far as thrilling bike to ride in the twisties. Yeah, it's just, it's a great package. So, after riding it, I wouldn't call it bland. No. I think it's a lot of fun.
This question's from me, actually. Does it come with Apple CarPlay?
No.
Android Auto?
No. So, and if I'm wrong, contradict me.
Well, the Honda website says, what does it say? It says, Honda smartphone voice control system through the Honda Road Sync app allows you to access your Android or iOS device via Bluetooth headset for navigation, calls, messages, and music. The 5-inch TFT screen is also customizable with four distinct types of display.
I don't think it has Apple CarPlay.
No.
If I had a tenner in my pocket now, I'd put it down on the fact it doesn't. So you've got voice control, but there's no kind of, there's no, you, do you need a USB to use Apple CarPlay still?
Yes.
You do? Are you sure?
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, the USB charging port is under the seat.
Oh.
Yeah, I, crazy. Interesting. Crazy. You've got like a little 12-volt socket or whatever it is on the dash. No, it's got, yeah, you've got voice control, but I think all that, all the stuff about controlling music and stuff like that is through your phone.
Why is it under the seat?
I'm sure. I don't know. I had that on the 500X. Used to get it a lot. Used to get charging kind of ports under your seat, and then we've seen them kind of come round to the dash more in recent years, haven't we? But I'm always disappointed when I don't see a USB port on the dash, and you've got a 12-volt socket or something like that that you need to put an adapter in to plug a USB
like on the
in.
GS, right?
Yeah, and again, I used to be handy when kind of on certain sat navs and things like that, but. For the majority of devices that I'll charge while riding, a USB port is handy. So yeah, I kind of wish that was up front, and you know, surely it wouldn't have upped the price too much to have But no, I pretty or 99% certain it doesn't come with Apple CarPlay.
That's a shame. I think Apple CarPlay. You know, if they're looking for a commuter or as a tourer or anything, Apple CarPlay is for me.
You love it, don't you?
Yeah, man, absolutely. Yeah. It's so good. Just for navigation, above anything else, just for navigation.
I do wonder how much it costs. Do they have to pay a license? Do they,
I guess so. I have no idea.
But that's the thing with the motorbike world, isn't it? That things we take for granted in cars are like premium items or premium accessories. You know, if you look at radar-assisted cruise control, you know, you don't even find it on the GS at the moment, but you'll find it on the Multistrada, on the new Tiger 1200. But, you know, you've got a 10-year-old Jeep that's got radar cruise control on, haven't it? So things like that. So I do wonder if things like Apple CarPlay are held back for the more premium machines. And, you know, the motorbike world seems to be about 10 years behind the car world when it comes to accessories like that.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's just, for me, that would be a reason why I'd buy a bike. It sounds crazy, right?
Yeah, you're going to get a lot of hate on YouTube after saying that.
But no, I remember just choosing a bike to go over to Ireland with. And it was the Multistrada or the NT1100. And trying to get the navigation to work on the Multistrada's dash, where you have to download like two different apps on your phone and then try and get them to sync and talk, and then you might get some navigation on your dash. Versus just plugging your phone in and having Apple CarPlay. So much easier.
Yeah, that's quite a nice choice to have, though, isn't it?
No.
Multistrada or the new NC. Yeah, I kind of
get it. Very spoiled.
For me, it's not such a big deal, to be honest with you. I've got a TomTom. I've got my phone. It wouldn't bother me so much. But I have used it, and I do get how handy it is, particularly when you're dashing to places at home and you're looking to find somewhere. Again... It's adventure biking is so different for individuals,
different
isn't it?
Folks.
Yeah.
And finally, Dawi Marais. Sorry, Dawi. I completely butchered your name, probably.
It's fine.
Dawi Marais says, too heavy and underpowered.
Not particularly a question. Too heavy, we'll take that first. 210 kilograms.
Quite heavy, really, for a midway bike.
For a midway bike, fully, so that's wet. So that's like all the fluids on board. 16.9-litre tank, which is on the smaller side.
So it's sub 200 kilos.
I don't think it's particularly heavy for an adventure bike. But I suspect I know where, and I'm not going to ask you to say the name again, where the person is coming from is that, if you're looking from an off-road perspective, if you're looking for an adventure bike to hit the trails a lot, then it's heavy, you know. But an awful lot of adventure bikes are heavy to hit the trails a lot, and you know, like my attitude is if you're a real regular trail rider, buy a trail bike. They are much better off-road than adventure bikes. Yeah. But if you're looking to do a bit of everything, then that's the joy of adventure bikes, isn't it?
For sure.
But again, different strokes, different folks. Not enough power. I'm not quite sure why that would be said. Like 91 horsepower, 75 newton meters of torque. The power to weight ratio, if that matters, but the power to weight ratio, because it is as the same level as the standard Africa Twin 1100. It's better. Honda were telling us a lot of technical things. It's better than the Afro Twin Adventure Sports. And it's better than the CB500X or pretty much any other adventure bike in Honda's lineup.
That's interesting, but a criticism often of Honda's adventure bikes is that they do feel a little bit underpowered.
Yeah, it's the way, I guess, people say that about the Africa Twin, isn't it? Because what's the Africa Twin, about 101 brake horsepower, something like that?
Yeah, is it just over 100?
Yeah, and it's close to 1100cc engine, there or thereabouts. But it's not a highly tuned engine, is it? Well, the GS behind us, what's the 1250, 1249, yeah, something like that, makes 136, am I right in saying? So they don't tend to over-tune their bikes, but for a 750 to make 91 brake horsepower, and it certainly doesn't feel underpowered. Yep, you don't get the gut thump of acceleration, but you don't get it on the Tenere. So, personally, I don't think it's particularly underpowered for a bike of its size.
You kind of need to ride it before you say that, right?
Well, I don't know, man. Like, I'm in a privileged position, whereas I get to ride these bikes before other people. So, and I think, you know, I'm not going to... What was his name? Or her name?
Dawi.
There we go. You know, may have ridden lots of Honda bikes and be, you know, super knowledgeable about that. And you can kind of look at the stats and kind of have a bit of a guess about, well, have a good gut feeling about how a bike's going to perform. But after riding it, I disagree. I don't think it lacks power.
Yeah, cool. Fair enough. Well, that's everything, actually. We've just gone through all the questions there. We've given a good rundown of the launch experience. Quick top five about the bike, which you absolutely nailed.
Well, cheers for that. Yeah. Maybe warn me next time you want a list.
And yeah, I think that's about it for this quick podcast about the Honda XL 750 Transalp.
Yeah, great bike, great launch. Really enjoyed this one. And yeah, please do keep an eye out in the May-June issue of Venture Bike Rider magazine. So not the current issue, but the May-June issue. And there'll be a review of the bike up on YouTube at the ABR YouTube channel, which is at ABR Magazine, isn't it?
ABR Magazine.
Yeah.
We'll link that in the description as well, right?
Yeah. And please do let us know, you know, your comments, thoughts about the bike below the videos as well. And hopefully, you know, we might get to address them in a future pod.
Yeah, and I really want to know if I've pronounced Dawi right. So, Dawi.
I imagine not.
Yeah. Right. Well, thank you very much for listening, everyone.
You're looking at me.
Yeah, thanks for
thanking me for listening to you during this podcast. No, it's been great.
Cool.
Till the next time.